The Big Brother live feeds are back this Thursday night, and you can be watching them all summer long with CBS All Access and get to see every single episode of Big Brother anytime. So go ahead and check out 1 week for free of CBS All Access with our link, robhasawebsite.com/livefeeds. That's robhasawebsite.com/livefeeds. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who wants to remind you that, again, watching this podcast is no guarantee of future success on Big Brother. I'm Rob Sesternino, everybody, and welcome back. For the first time in Big Brother 19 proper, no more Big Brother 19 preseason, we are live and ready to go after a two-hour premiere of the Summer of Temptation. It has begun, and here with me in the studio, you see a man who is pumped up. This is his time of year. It's Christmas in June, and we're not just talking about the girl that almost got evicted. Here is Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
Good. Yeah, pumped up. We're back in the swing of things, but yeah, I've already had my fill of Christmas puns, I think. Which is a shame that we've jumped the gun and really milked this cow so hard already, but
yes, okay.
Here we are.
All right, so very excited as well to have this man back on the line. He is ready to go. Here is Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you?
I am ready to go. I'm ready for a season of all new players. Oh, never mind.
Oh! Nope. not the case.
Fist!
No.
Missed it by that much.
Yeah, so to the surprise of few, it was also announced that Paul was in the house now. He is back, ready to go. And we had, I thought that this was a pretty interesting 2 hours. Very upset to see Cameron go out, who I thought could have been fun. But I think that ultimately the invoice due finally from Steve and Ian winning, I think, was paid tonight by Cameron. A lot to talk about, of course, Paul's return, all of the temptations, all of these new players in the house. So a lot to chew on. We're going to take your questions, hashtag RHAP, later on in the show. So get those in and get us all set up for tomorrow's second night of the Big Brother Tonight premiere event. Brent, how are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great. First of all, Cameron wasn't on my draft team, so I feel great about that. And we're not replacing him with Paul. Okay. Julie said,
let me just put a disclaimer out there for the LFC photo for almost nobody cares about your draft. So let's not spend the whole summer talking about it. Okay.
Moving on. I'm actually thrilled with tonight. Like you said, the invoice for Steve and Ian came due. And even though Cameron really seemed like a really fun guy who was a fan of us and a fan of rap, here's the thing. I feel like that even more than anything, rather than the nerd archetype getting booted out of the house, I feel like he also got a little bit unlucky in that the other two people sitting on the block with him were women, because all of the women voted to evict him tonight. Mm-hmm. And that was the difference.
Yeah. Also, Ramses was part of that crew,
right,
that voted.
And Kevin,
that,
all six women voted to evict him.
Yeah, so
somehow a nerd thing formed without him. That's a shame.
Not great.
Not good.
Not great. So,
well, you know what? Watching him on the show, he doesn't. It's sort of weird because he looks like a nerd, but you start talking to him, he doesn't sound like a nerd. He sounds like a bro-y kind of guy who's just here to have some fun, talk some sports, and you know, I mean, that's how I perceived him when he was talking on the show. Anyway.
All right. Well, let me just set everything up here at the start of the show. We're going to be live after just about every episode of the season on the East Coast time, if you're joining us here for the first time. So be on the lookout for that. Again, we'll be back tomorrow night, 10:15 p.m. Eastern time. Also, after the show on Thursday night, the Big Brother live feeds will kick off. And so we will be watching that closely Thursday night. And we will have some special coverage for you guys as well on Friday morning to cover everything that we learn overnight. If you want to get your hands on the Big Brother live feeds, you could, of course, go to robhasawebsite.com/livefeeds and get 1 week free of CBS All Access. That's robhasawebsite.com/livefeeds. You can also click on the banner on robhasawebsite.com. And of course, to subscribe to our podcast, which are absolutely free, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes and subscribe to our main podcast feed. Also, we will have a special Big Brother only podcast feed available. That's on iTunes as well, and that will include all of the stuff that the LFC is doing on the side, including some overnight updates of the live feed. So a lot going on here on RHAP this summer. All right. So, Alex, in your mind, what's the biggest headline of the night?
I think you really hit it. You know, Cameron is, I like the way you put it. He's paying the dues that, were paid forward for Ian and Steve. I think that's a good way of putting it. I don't know to what degree, you know, it'd be interesting once feeds come on, maybe we'll get a better understanding of like to what degree Cameron's glasses played in this situation, but it can't help. You know, we've seen this with Ian and with Steve. It looked like they were in trouble. Ian got, you know, saved the first week. And if not for that, I mean, he really could have gone first. So, you know, we've seen this before with the superfan. It's not a sure thing that this archetype goes far. It's just that if they survive the first week, they seem to go far. And unfortunately, Cameron could not.
Okay, here's the first question in terms of processing this. Glenn, Jody, Cameron, Brent, rank them 1, 2, 3 in terms of who got screwed the worst. One is screwed the worst of these three people who are day one evictions.
I would say that probably Glenn got screwed the worst. He seemed to have a really good social game, and I don't think there's any chance he ever would have been evicted on a vote.
You better believe
Jody
it.
Jody at least got to camp. I know, right? Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, I missed. I should have known you were going to say something, and somehow I blew it, Rob. Jody at least got a vote from Dan. She got to campaign to one person. But I think the person who got screwed the least was Cameron. He got to campaign to the entire house. He got to play Big Brother. I thought he was a little awkward talking to people. I thought he was a little desperate talking to other people. And it was just, I don't know. I just felt like that they weren't connecting with him. And it was really weird that this sort of Misfits alliance formed and he was not a part of that. And even some of the other people that were sort of maybe it misfit-ish, like Christmas and Raven and some other people sort of glommed onto that group. And yet, again, he wasn't part of that. I would have thought they wanted to save him, but maybe somebody like Ramses was leading the charge saying, you know, we've got to get this guy out. He knows what he's doing. I don't know. I can't explain it other than he did seem a little awkward to me.
To me, I think that Jody is still number one, that she ended up just getting picked last in the draft, and that was ultimately it for her. She really didn't have a chance to campaign. I think between Glenn and Cameron, it's close, because both of them had three shots to end up staying in the game, where that Glenn was part of that group of four. They had to stay on the rocket. Had his group been able to do that, he would have been safe. And then there was a second competition, right?
Yeah.
And then was there also a third? Was there a third part, or there was just his team went into a thing and then he came in last, so he was out?
I think there was three. Yeah, like, he competed. All the teams competed. Then he
right.
competed.
All the teams competed. Then three teams competed. Then two teams competed. Then they,
eventually
they,
it was just like him and Corey with coconuts. Right. I do remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then basically it was also Cameron had three shots at this. He had the one shot to impress Paul and get the friendship bracelet. And then he had a full competition where three people ultimately were going to end up getting on the block. And then he lost in a vote where, you know, he probably would have been better off playing in that competition. But, you know, he at least got voted out. So I think of those three, I think that he is the least screwed of Jody, and Glenn, Cameron.
Yeah.
Can we at least talk about that each time along the way he misplayed his hand?
Yes.
And talking to Paul, if he would have just been more honest with Paul and said, you know what, dude, I want to keep you in the house because you're a bigger target than me. And I would never want to get rid of you because it doesn't behoove me to do that. I think Paul would have probably given him a friendship bracelet, but instead he went to him promising like loyalty and, dude, I'm on your side. And of course it's going in one ear and out the other with Paul. The second thing was during the competition, he threw it. He said he didn't want to win. He was like, I don't want to stay up here too long. I got to find the right time to jump off to get one of these apples. And then he went into a vote. I mean, Rob, along the way, he just misplayed this one right after the other. I don't even think you can call him being screwed by the night one twist. He could have saved himself, and he
well,
just
I
did.
Said of the three people of
okay,
he
saying,
was the
I'm
least
not feeling
screwed.
Bad for him.
I feel bad for him. I
do.
Well, let me just say I do feel bad for him because I feel like that this was his dream to go out there, and I can always relate to the person that's the super fan that
you know, the months things, of torture of
because
casting.
I think that every single person that goes on one of these shows that really, you know, you dream of doing it, but you also sort of like the thing that keeps you up at night is like, oh, what what if it all goes horribly wrong? And I think that he's the kind of person where if he could have gotten his feet under him, he would have been a real threat to win the game. So I feel bad for him on that level. But I do think I'm not going to sugarcoat that he had a great night and it was just unlucky that in terms of he played Paul totally wrong. I think that the thing to understanding Paul needs to be the center of attention. I think he identified him as a guy who potentially was going to be in the diary room and was going to be taking airtime away from Paul. I think that Elena really played this perfectly where, you know, you want to sort of like present Paul with like, hey, look, I'm a wacky sidekick to you, as opposed to I think that Paul looked at him as, hey, this is a guy, even though there was no archetype in Big Brother 18 that fit the Steve or the Ian.
Michelle, kind of.
I guess so. I guess so. But for Paul, he was not impressed with Cameron in any way, shape, or form.
No. Yeah, Cameron didn't throw an apple at his kidney, but, I mean, he didn't impress him either, for sure. I think, you know, there was even a line there that where he said something about, you know, I'm a super fan. I've watched all the seasons. It's like, well, if you know that, then you know Paul isn't. And that doesn't speak to Paul. Like, that would speak to, you know, if Ian was back in the house, that's your pitch. Sure. But this is Paul. Paul doesn't care about that. In fact, that might be a turnoff for Paul. Paul probably doesn't want to play with you because you know too much. So, yeah, I think he approached that wrong. And then, right, like, throwing that competition just didn't seem to make a lot of sense. Although the nature of the competition was weird, where, like, the last one standing was clearly beneficial, but second or third to last, not necessarily. So that was kind of weird. But I mean, yeah, like Brent said, really, he had multiple phases where we saw separate examples of him misplaying.
So I want to talk about the introduction of Paul into the game. This had been rumored. I think Hamster Watch was reporting this on Twitter. There was some skepticism about whether or not he was going to be back, but it did feel like it was a foregone conclusion. And at the point where Julia said that a returning favorite might have a chance to come back, it was very clear that your boy was going to be back. Now, I think that this is going to be a real tightrope walk for Paul this season, because I do think that we have seen, we have some precedent here for a person who comes back with a lot of goodwill to the fans, ends up, before too long, ends up being the most hated person across, you know, whether it's, you know, that they could be, Paul might be number one on Jokers in about 48 hours. And I think we could certainly have a scenario where in 4 weeks from now, he's number 11, number 12 in the polls. So, Alex, what would be the recipe for Paul to stay a fan favorite this season?
Lose and be loved, I guess.
Lose and be loved.
It's like
undercat.
Right. You have to maintain like that underdog role, the undercat role, whatever you want to call it. And he is going to find himself in a position probably where he's not that, because he's the returning player and probably some things may go his way. And if he's there long enough, it's going to be because he finds himself in a power position, because if he's on the outs, he's probably gone soon.
Yeah.
So it almost seems inevitable that if he was to go really far and succeed, that, yeah, that goodwill will sour over time.
Brett, how do you have a recipe for Paul to avoid America ending up being
over it,
never cared, pissed?
I think
against Paul.
Well, I think I think over it is worse than pissed. I think if America is pissed, at least they're talking about you still. If America is over it, I think that's really what you want to avoid if you're Paul. So you got to keep it fresh. I think he did a good job. Like, he's using the catchphrases we know tonight, but he had some good lines that were like just original lines that were just like, oh, right, this guy was kind of just a funny, clever guy. He's not exclusively catchphrases.
What do you think, Brian?
He's more of that.
I think the one thing he needs to do, ironically, is not win this pendant of protection, because it's going to come off as very Netta-ish. It's ironic that on Big Brother Canada, for those of you who don't watch Big Brother Canada, a returning player who was a fan favorite was given a power where she was safe for a certain amount of weeks in the beginning of the game, and she quickly became a not-so-fan favorite. And I have to believe that Paul is at least a force to win this vote on Sunday night and go into the Den of Temptation. And if he gets the pendant of protection, he's going to be safe for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me at that point? I mean, I feel like at that point that it's probably going to be history repeating itself. And by the time that we get close to jury, that we're going to be pretty sick of it.
Well, here's what's tricky for Paul, is that America is going to vote for who ultimately gets the care package. And again, when we watched Big Brother OTT, it was only the internet fans. And I felt like that we sort of had a good sense of like people were coordinating about, okay, don't give the care package to this person this week because they're going to need that care package on that week. We don't have a list of what all of the care packages are. We should assume that they're going to get better as they go along. And really, what chance, and just like in Big Brother Canada, where, you know, you had returning favorites going up against newbies in a fan vote, I mean, there's almost no chance that Paul isn't the recipient of this first fan vote, Brent.
Not unless somebody else gets it, if the internet solidifies behind somebody else.
Oh, come on, like, stop it.
What?
I mean, this is on TV, Brent. This isn't OTT, where it's just people that are like on Twitter and social media that are watching.
Well, how do you vote?
There are 7 million people that are going to watch this show. And
so what? So is it futile at this point? We should just like hand it to Paul? Because I was trying to campaign for Brent.
Let's hold on. Whoa.
Brent is right, though. They have to find their way to the website. That is an element.
They have to find their way to the website. But let's not, we're not advocating anybody. We're not going down that rabbit hole again. Okay. But
I wasn't aware of that. And sorry, we didn't talk before the show. I didn't know I couldn't campaign for Josh because he's going to be great feeds.
Sure. I mean, if you want, you can campaign for Josh, but Josh isn't, it's going to be you and Josh's family voting for Josh on this first, you know, eventually, you know, things will change, but I think that it might be in Paul's best interest if he gets this power to refuse it. If he gets the opportunity to be the first person to go into the den of temptation, if he has this chance, it might be the chance to walk away from it, because if he ends up going down that same road that we saw Netta go down on Big Brother Canada, for those of you who watch that, I think that to end up being the returning player, and that was with 7 other returning players, that he needs to sort of make everybody else in the house feel like he's one of them, and that he isn't painted as, hey, it's the underdogs versus Paul's alliance.
Yeah, I mean, he said all the right things when he first came in. I need to get off the radar as fast as I can. And unfortunately, the more things they give you that are just to you, that are friendship bracelets or pendants of protection or whatever, hat of household or whatever you want to call it, like that's going to push him to the forefront each and every time.
Can I ask something really quickly? I need to go back and listen to what Julie said, but she said basically it was similar to the OTT rules where, if, you know, once you're given the chance to go into the den of temptation or take a temptation, you know, that's it for you. But if he refuses it, is he back in the mix again? Like maybe there's a chance Paul would refuse if he said, you know what, I don't want to take it now, because if I take it now, then I'm ineligible for the rest of the summer. I don't know. If there's a guy who would turn this down, I think it would be Paul, because he's crazy enough to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's not just like BBOTT. It was the same thing with the care packages during Big Brother 18, right. Which I don't believe he ever received one, correct? Did he get one towards the end?
I don't think he did.
I want to say no.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe...
Working like a charm, this care package.
Right. So again, that the TV audience is unpredictable, but you have to think that the one known commodity in the house is going to be the person most likely to get it after 1 week. Same thing with Alyssa, who was the one person who had some notoriety being connected with Rachel and having the MVP. Like, what chance did anybody else have where at least that they were already known by a Big Brother fan base competing against all newbies? So I want to talk about the rose ceremony, basically, which was given out. I actually thought that this was a pretty clever idea on the part of Big Brother to take something that people always love, that first night of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, where you have all those crazy introductions, and Paul was basically set up like The Bachelor, and he had his like bouquet of roses that he had to give out, and everybody got to come in and see if they could get one of these first impression roses. Alex, did you like how they did this?
I liked it okay. This told me that, you know, anytime I like complain about Big Brother on Twitter, people are always like, well, why do you watch? And it's like, this is basically like the first HOH from OTT that everyone said they loved. So they do listen to fan feedback, as it turns out. Like, they have to, because this is like going back to something that seemed like just kind of a thing, but like the fans were very, very reactive to how much they liked that BB bug.
How is this like that? Because I feel like that, if I remember, I feel like that that was sort of like you passed it on to another person and then they passed it on to another person.
It was, but you had the element of like Jason had just arrived. And so you have one veteran in a house of new people and people were trying to figure out like, are we going to screw the veteran with this? So it was a little bit reversed. But like, I think it's kind of the same introduction of one veteran into a new house where like, they're kind of setting him apart through the first task or competition right away.
Right. I can buy it. I mean, it's a little bit of a reverse, like a mirror image of it. But instead of screwing the person who you're going to give the bug to, and there was a lot of strategy going into that, you're trying to gain safety from Paul by schmoozing him or otherwise making him feel like you were okay with him. I thought it was interesting that he did not give Josh a friendship bracelet. And I thought that he would, but then I sort of understood after the fact, maybe, like you said, Rob, maybe Josh is not making Paul feel like Paul is the center of attention because Josh is like at an 11. I thought it was funny, the line that Paul said about, you know, if you're at an 11 and I'm at a 10, one of us is going to go to jail. I thought that was funny. But I'm interested to see if they can work together. Paul might be cognizant of the fact that Josh might be a little bit too much like Victor, and maybe that he doesn't want to like create the same image in people's minds, and he wants to maybe make friends with some other people.
Well, let me go the other way. I don't think that Paul likes Josh at all. And
really?
I think that he like sold him a bill of goods. And I think that Josh was buying it hook, line, and sinker because Paul said to Josh, like, okay, do you trust me? Do you trust me? And I was like, as soon as he said, do you trust me? I'm like, oh, he's not getting a friendship bracelet. And then he's going to try to spin it to him like, okay, your boy, me and you, we are secret friends. We are that on the down low. Don't tell anybody. And Josh is like, okay, oh, I got it. Totally. That's exactly why Paul didn't give me the bracelet. He doesn't want anybody to know that we're actually best friends. It's like, nope. If you were actually best friends, if you were actually going to work together, you would have been one of the eight people that he gave a friendship bracelet to. He doesn't actually, he's stringing you along. And I don't think that Paul particular, like Paul, I really think that is, he wants all the attention. He doesn't want other big personalities with him in the house.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, if for no other reason than just that kind of, you know, he has 9 safety bracelets and he's going in knowing that like, there's probably some people that don't want to work with him. So anyone that was coming up and saying like, I definitely want to work with you, I feel like if he had a good vibe about them, they were getting a bracelet, like Elena with the cheese sandwich or something like that. You know what I mean? Like he did save the other people who it seemed like he got good vibes from. So yeah. I'm hesitant to think that he did from Josh.
He didn't save Megan, though, and that's I felt fair. Like that they had a good rapport going on, and she said she was an obvious fan of his, and she recounted a few things from Big Brother last season, and he did not give her a bracelet.
She knows too much.
In some ways, it was so random. I wasn't surprised that he gave Jessica a bracelet, but on the other hand, I was surprised that he did give Ramses a bracelet. Mm-hmm. So.
And again, we're victims of the edit because we don't have feeds yet, so we're, right. You know, who knows? Maybe there was, like, an amazing conversation where him and, you know, Johnny Bravo there, like, became best of buds, and we just didn't see that.
Yeah, he ultimately gives friendship bracelets, just to reset that, to Kevin, who did not know who Paul was, which is not a good sign for Kevin. You know, we get on people like, oh, this person's not a super fan. What did they just see last season? Apparently, Kevin has not even seen last season, which is, a weird spot to be in.
And it's his fault that Paul's there, and it's his fault that Cam is gone, and he gets the first safety bracelet. This Kevin. Kevin. I'll tell you.
Okay, well, I want to get to Kevin and his taking that offer. He gives one to Raven, to Dominique, to Mark, to Jason, to Jessica, to Ramses, and to Elena. We saw tonight Kevin took that offer for $25,000. Obviously, no sort of sense of the history of the Lori Valenti of it all, where I believe that she took, what, $5,000 on the first night and then became the second person kicked out, I think, in Big Brother 5. But for Kevin, I actually thought this was not a bad move for him, because what the hell does he know? That $25,000 is like better than third place money on the show. And, you know, he's probably not going to win. So I don't have an issue with it.
But he wasn't the only person to press the button. I mean, Cody, Ramses, Mark, Alex, Raven, Jason, and Kevin all pressed the button. It was just that Kevin was the one who pressed it first.
Yeah.
And so if he hadn't pressed it, somebody else would have gotten the money. You can, I mean, if you were watching the episode, if everybody had a light, and if the light lit up red, that means you pressed it, but you didn't get the money. If it was green, obviously like Kevin's, you press it and you did get the money, and everybody else's lights were just off. So that's how you could tell who pressed it and who didn't. The other thing was that was weird was he won the $25,000 and then he starts disrobing. I mean, what was that?
Sweaty from the comp.
Yeah.
It was a hot day out here in Cali.
But he took it. He's like loosening his tie. He's unbuttoned his shirt.
It's getting hot in here.
Like,
I got to take some
clothes
off.
You see him like being let off?
Yeah.
Oh my
I'm
God.
Used to the Nor'easters up in Boston. Yeah. I don't deal with this what? LA weather.
He protested a bit too much. I would have been on to him.
Yeah, I do think that Kevin is going to be very fun to watch this season. I mean, I think we sort of had that sense from the interviews yeah. that he did going into it, but I think he will be exactly what we expected from him.
Really? Because if it's exactly what you expected, then that means he's going to finish in exactly third place, and I'm going to have to cover him all freaking season.
Okay. That someone could take really him to two.
Yeah, we'll see.
Fine.
We'll see what's going to happen. Okay. Let's talk about some of the other players that we haven't gotten into tonight and just get a sense of them. Brent, who impressed you tonight?
Who impressed me tonight? I thought that Ramsey's, even though he's like slithering around the floor up there with his alliance mates, Megan and Jillian, and I think they even brought Raven in at, or was it Raven that they brought in? Yeah. There were four people.
Did you say
up
Alex?
There. It was Alex. Yeah. Thank you. It wasn't Raven. It was Alex. Thank you. But by the way, somebody else who impressed me tonight, but I'll get to her in a second. I thought that all four of them were really fun. I feel like they need each other, and I feel like they're aware of that they need each other. I thought that if you actually look at the votes at the end, it was very interesting how like everything broke down. Like the three really bro-y guys in Matt, Mark, and Cody all voted to evict Jillian. It was just, I thought that, I'll just say this. I don't think that the votes at the end were an accident. I feel like everybody knew where everybody was pretty much voting. And if you weren't in the majority, then you were out of the loop. Because I felt like the majority knew where the votes were going and who was going to be evicted tonight.
Yeah. And I'll also add that group that voted against Cameron, I feel like that if Paul was on the block, I feel like that group would have voted against Paul.
Oh, I yeah, so. 100%.
That group.
Well, that's the super fan cluster, it seems like. I mean, with the exception of a few, like, that really seems to be the people. I mean, that was their bonding thread. You know, they said, like, hey, we seem to be the ones that know the game. So they got together. You know, we had the moment from, I guess, Megan in the DR where she says, like, oh, if I have a chance, I'm getting rid of Paul right away. And mm-hmm. she wasn't the only one to voice this. I mean, even, you know, Cody is not in that group, but he wants Paul out right away, too. So, yeah, I mean, Paul certainly got some problematic people that he's going to have to navigate. And this group, yeah, I mean, it does seem like the only alliance that's tangible from what we got tonight was this kind of cluster that maybe there's some add-ons where that can become some kind of a majority.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting before we started the show tonight, Alex, you said that the temptations tonight were not really choices at all because somebody was going to press the button for $25,000, yeah. which means Paul is definitely going to come in. Paul is going to be safe because he's handing out the friendship bracelets. He gets a bracelet himself. And just so happens that in 3 days, the Den of Temptation has an America's Vote. What do you know it? And it's the pendant of protection. He's going to be safe for 3 more weeks. So, I mean, like, again, this is the second time in 2 podcasts that I've used this analogy. It's like putting lipstick on a pig. We know what's going on. You're trying to keep Paul safe, but I just don't feel like we need all the pomp and circumstance to get there. If you want to put Paul safe in the house for four flipping weeks, that's okay. Just don't make me think that there was ever a choice or a temptation involved in this, because there wasn't. Yes. It was just a shame.
It's the illusion of choice. I agree.
The illusion of choice, certainly. And you know that I think that the choice is not so much on the part of America. We know how the voters are going to go. I think the choice of the temptation is really going to be on Paul, whether or not he's going to accept this, because I do think that, as we've said, there's a case to be made that Paul should potentially refuse this choice.
I think he should. I know that it goes against everything we've thought, but after seeing it play out on Big Brother Canada, I feel like the house will become quickly resentful. They'll treat him like an other. Well, he's somebody else. He's higher than us because we cannot nominate him. And the minute his check comes due, I feel like he'll be on the block.
The biggest competition for Paul in this season is going to be Paul, and is going to be Paul fighting the temptation to have a big head at times. And I do think that that is his Achilles heel. I think that he's going to have a really hard time maintaining just a level head throughout this. Alex, do you feel like that he was able to do a good job with that in Big Brother 18?
I think he was pretty grounded in 18, but I think a big part of that is he gets kicked down right away.
Right.
He was in that right. Glenn Alliance. Like, he's on the outs scrambling from the very onset. So he is humbled in week one of his season. I think maybe coming off of the huge arc that he then took, where he's now kind of like ending the season on top. He didn't win, but everyone told him. People come up to him in the streets out here in L.A. apparently 20, 30, 40 times a day and tell him he should have won. So how can that not affect you a little bit?
He should have won if he would have not taken the call to the end.
Well, that's...
Yeah, but he won't even acknowledge though. He won't acknowledge that.
So. I was all in on Paul last season. And there's no reason to dislike Paul at this point in time. I see a lot of red flags for your boy going into this season. I feel like that this is going to be a spot for him that he probably can't refuse, much like the Den of Temptation. But I think that this is a season that I feel like it's going to be difficult for him to walk away from this season being as liked by the audience as he was going in, Brent.
Yeah, that's the lot of the person who comes back. I mean, I can't remember many people, with the exception of Rachel Riley, who came back, but she was disliked on her first season, so she had nowhere to go but up. Anybody that's come back that's been loved their first time around, for the most part, you just don't like them as much the second time around. It's like you've seen it all, and you don't want to see it again, especially if they get power. Yeah.
And also, it's the thing where, that you come back, you come on the first time to be liked, come back the second time to win. I think he's going to have a real uphill battle to win in this season, being the only person who is back as a returning player.
Yeah, it's the story of Harvey Dent all over again. We always mention it, but you either die the hero or you live long enough to become the villain. That really is the story of Big Brother.
Yeah. And Paul also had a very much up and down ride all through Big Brother 18, where he was down in the beginning and then he rose back up. And then he ultimately, after Pauly Calafiore ended up going out of the house, then it looked good for a while. And then things like Nicole flipped things back around and then it was bad. And then he's managed to survive Victor going out, and then it looked good again. And then ultimately it looked like he was going to win, and then he wasn't going to win. So
real roller coaster.
Yeah, I mean,
he had to comp out there at the end, but he's on rock bottom, and it was Paulie taking there was the PP friendship there that actually pulled him out of that
PP
spot.
Always pulls through.
So it was like he's empowered because of Paulie, and then at that point you started to see him like berating Frank a little bit, like now he had some juice in the house, you know what I mean? So he didn't necessarily make good social plays when he felt like he was in control. I think he's someone that plays a lot better from behind. Like, that's true with poker. Some people play really good with like a big amount of chips, and I'm not that at all. I end up like just losing money because I play too much. Whereas some people, like, if you only have this amount of chips in front of you and you know pretty much your options are limited to like shoving them all in or just getting out of the mix and letting other people play, like, in a lot of ways, some people are better like that. And I feel like maybe Paul's one of those people. We'll see.
I think he's also prone to have the, meltdown. And people are talking about this in the chat room about when he got into it with Big Meech. I think that that he is prone to the blow up if things are not going his way. If he's in a power position, or if he's being like sort of like frozen out, if he's in a situation where he's going to be backdoored, that I do think that he can have a short fuse with, which is not a fantastic trait either. And, I was going to say that he's not a studier when it comes to the comps, but let's not get too granular. He did win that final HOH going back to Big Brother 18. Let's talk about some of these other players. I thought that Christmas made a brilliant decision tonight. I really did, and I thought it worked out so well for her. She was in this group with Cameron and with Jillian, and she was ultimately the swing vote, where they had this thing of, do you want a comp or do you want to vote? And predictably, Jillian went with a vote. Predictably, Cameron said, I want to do a competition. And I think we were all thinking, okay, well, Christmas is going to want to do a competition. But something that you guys talked a lot about in the preseason was that if Christmas can throw challenges, get people not thinking, okay, I'm a comp beast, and so she's somebody I have to watch out for. She did exactly the right moves you would have wanted her to make, because she said, okay, I'm going to turn it over to the House. And I think that if I was somebody campaigning in that spot, I think I would have gone out there and said, you know, I turned it over to you guys. And I think that, like, sort of like, I wasn't the one vote that said, hey, let's do a comp. I trust you guys. And I think that she ultimately got to stay in the House. She got to, you know, she got the least number of votes against her, and she didn't have to show off that she was a threat in the challenges, Brent.
Yeah, she probably played it as good as she could. I worry that we're being a little bit results oriented in that she stayed in the House, and thus, oh, it looks like a brilliant move in hindsight, but had she been evicted and they feared her, I don't know that we'd be talking so great about her. The one thing that is interesting is that the one person who voted not for the House to vote is the person who was evicted. I wonder, in that downtime, you know, I have to believe the House guest said, well, what did you vote? And it quickly became apparent that Cameron had voted for a competition and the other people had voted for a vote. So I wonder if that also played a part in his demise.
Yeah, I don't know if you needed the strip dance scene to tell that Cameron was in a desperate state of affairs, but it certainly didn't hurt. It certainly sent that message to me. And yeah, I mean, I think Cameron really had an idea that if this goes to a vote, it's not going to be great for me. Jillian didn't look like a very, you know, obviously Christmas is going to be strong in these competitions, but Cameron probably thought he could beat Jill. So he was going to roll the dice with that. And I think that's the right move for him. I was surprised that Christmas didn't go that way, because I think that's a lot better for Cameron if he gets the opportunity to play there.
To be fair, it's not the first time that desperation has forced someone into stripping. That is often the, you know, one of the reasons that people ultimately get into that. But there really was, a lot shown for Cameron.
At least he got a full 2 hours, and I thought it was very telling, a lot of foreshadowing at the beginning, when he said he's a microbiologist, and he said he's not going to hide it.
He wasn't hiding anything.
Right? Was it Dominique who didn't tell them what she really does? Right. But she said, I don't want people to know what I do, because people who are smart get kicked out of the House, and the camera immediately shot to Cameron. And by the way, earlier in the day, I had been potentially spoiled, well, I was spoiled in hindsight, about the fact that Cameron was the person who was evicted, because they did some really bad photoshopping skills when they showed the group shot of Cameron. His foot wasn't even on the ground in one. It looked like he was levitating, for God's sake. And Paul's widow peak was seen in one of the photos on Entertainment Weekly. So a bad job by Big Brother. You totally spoiled it, and Twitter knew.
Yeah, they really blew that one. Like, oh, whose quaff is that? Well, it could only be one person.
Your boy. That's right. Let's talk through some of the other people we haven't touched on too much. Megan was somebody who had a lot of airtime. I was actually worried for her when they were going through the apples, because I felt like that she was somebody who was in the mix where she's definitely had enough airtime in this 2 hours that she could have been somebody who went home. Were you impressed with what you saw after one night of Megan, Alex?
Yeah. I was kind of high on Megan. I took a chance on her in the draft, and I think I like everything I'm seeing. I think she's someone that, you know, she can go in there and say, I'm a dog walker, and people are like, oh, and they just, you know, they want to discount you. But she's got a background that could be well suited to that. I mean, we've seen James worked as a prison guard, so we don't necessarily want to, you know, make that a one-to-one. Is that what you were going to say, Brent?
No, I was going to be like, so I get admonished for bringing up the draft, but your boy sitting there with you doesn't get admonished for it?
I'm just going to look. Okay. I'm going to shame you guys every time you bring up the draft.
To do it. Yeah, I was waiting on it.
Okay. I really was impressed by Megan as well. She's actually the person who, at least that we know of, I'm sure maybe Cameron did too, but that had watched our pre-Big Brother 19 podcast and had liked quite a few other videos related to Big Brother on YouTube. So she obviously did her homework, and I think that she is going to be a force to be reckoned with. She seemed to have enough sense to at least somewhat fade into the background, but keep allies around her and people that are like her in the House. I feel like there is a nice little power base there for her. And depending on how this first HOH shakes out, I think that she'll be fine.
Yeah, I think that this oddball alliance is going to be an interesting one to watch, because in some ways, like, you know, I'm sort of reminded of what was the alliance last season that we saw? Well, the Femme Fatales, where it was sort of like, okay, here we're going to get this group of women together, and we're going to be on the down low. But then you had people like, you know, Zakiya breaking off from that and Nicole breaking off from that. Mm-hmm. But this group, you feel like that if they can steer clear of the showmances, that they have a chance to be able to do some damage moving forward together. The one thing I would say that I don't like is that Ramsey's is a little like Devin Bro-ish in terms of inviting people to be in the alliance. Like, he came right out the first 5 minutes he was in the house like, hey, I'm a super fan. Are you guys super fans too? I feel like you're super fans. And he, okay, that was fine. But then, and then he's bringing, you know, by the end, then okay, I really like Raven. Let's bring her up here. That was when I think that was a Jillian that mm-hmm. came in at that point. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
Jillian came.
So there's a lot of people piling into this alliance very quickly.
Yeah, and it seemed like that conversation about like we're a super fan, so we're super fans, so let's work together. Like, it was three people in the room, but only two people talked. Like, Alex just sat there for the whole thing, and I'm just like, oh, this girl's totally gonna like spoil this later when she like feels like she has another ship she can, you know, bounce to. Like,
I feel like this
is falling apart sometime in the next few weeks.
I don't know. I'm going to give it more credit than you guys, because I feel like that Alex is somebody who would seem to relate well to those two on the couch. I know she didn't say a whole lot, but I was really taken with her later on in the episode when she was telling King Cody he can eat you know what. And
you're taken with her gameplay when she was terrible.
Right? I love the gameplay. It's great. Just what I would do. She was better than we
anticipated. I thought that she did a really good job. I think we were thinking she would be a train wreck, but she was actually pretty good. Let's talk about Cody that we brought him up. And Cody, at least I think, has been amusing to watch in terms of how that he's like has no social game really whatsoever. And he also is like not really trying, but he's talking about a lot of his like mind games that he's playing with people that are not really working. But it has been fun for me to watch, at least so far. Brent, are you still on board with Cody?
Yeah, I'm on board with him. I'm not loving what I'm seeing. I'm like, you're going to have to open up a little bit, dude. I mean, like, you can't just be cool all the time. I thought that the analogy that Paul used about a bad dinner date was so apropos watching the two of them talking. Like, so how old are you? 26. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, like, it's just, there was nothing there. Like, at least try to schmooze with him a little bit, telling him a little bit of something. He obviously knew who he was. I mean, you could have said something. Maybe it was just the editors having fun with that, but I have to believe that was probably pretty awkward for Paul. And it didn't look like he was really getting to know any of the other house guests. He did have the hots for Jessica early on, and Jessica does have the hots for him. So I'm hoping that they can get together and run this house. That would be actually fun. This is my dream, actually, because I would love for, like, the super fans and like the oddballs to get in power, because usually we don't like the people that get in power initially. It's usually like the Broey alliance that gets into power. So I would like it to be flipped, where it's like all the super fans and the oddballs who are in power, and then they get too much of a big head, and then like people like Matt and Cody and Jessica rise up and take power and run.
You want a bizarro season.
Yeah, it'd be fun. I've seen that other one before. I want to see something different.
Okay. All right, we could.
Plus, Cody's on my team too, so
we could see how that goes.
That's lie, though, man. If Cody is 27, then Derek is for sure a Parks and Rec coordinator. Like, this is a ridiculously terrible lie, dude.
How old is Cody?
He's in his 30s.
Yeah,
but like, he just does not look feasibly mid-20s to me. Like, I just can't. I can't get down.
Right, and the other thing is that I worry that his life experiences will expose the fact that he's lying. Like, he's like, I did this. I was in the Air Force. I was in the Marines. Like, you can't do everything that you're talking about and still be the age you're saying you are. So,
he's going to mention, like, voting for Clinton or something, and it's going to be all over.
Well, which one? So that's how I get to it. Okay. We have to check in with Alex. Alex, what was your night one report card for your boy, Matt?
I thought he did good. I thought he was saying almost all the right things. He shouldn't have said that one line to Paul about, like, I'd love to play with you, I'd love to play against you. Like, dude, no, I get what you're trying to do there, but no. You don't need to, you need to leave that sentence out is what you need to do. But,
well, that was the thing. You worried about him that he didn't know the game. You liked his social game. You thought everything would be fine. Yeah, but the fact that he didn't know the game, that was you thought that would be his Achilles heel, and it might have had he gotten one of those poison apples. If he ended up on the block instead of Cameron, honey, I have to believe he probably would have been.
But I like the way he played that competition, too. He stayed on long enough to get the pertinent clues, and then he selected an apple correctly. He didn't forget the clues. That's important.
That's the other thing Cameron did. Yeah, he forgot the clues.
Big,
so,
big
mistake. I mean,
too excited.
You're a super fan.
He's too excited.
And you forget the clues?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I, again, yeah, it's probably just, you know, you're a super fan. You're in there. It's the first night. You're thinking, like, oh, God, could it be me? Like, that's just the most mortifying fear you've had in the back of your head all this time you've been going through casting. And I'm sure that just kind of, like, overwhelms the senses at a point.
I do think that not being a super fan is an advantage in the early going, because it's like you aren't as nervous as the person whose dream it is to be at that point. Good I think point. That he had more butterflies than somebody who's like, oh, this is just a thing I'm doing, as opposed to the thing that I've been waiting to do. This is my shot at this. Now, this was a shot at it. Do we feel like the battle back is going to be in play, Brent?
I don't know. I'm sort of torn on this. If I had to guess, I would say yes. And here's the reason why. Because Cameron did not get an interview with Julie. That would be my biggest clue, that he did not get an interview with Julie. Even though she did say that he was evicted, I think there's a chance that he could find a way to get back into the game. Maybe they'll say it tomorrow night. Maybe they'll leave us hanging for a few weeks and we won't know. But I do hope.
But what's the precedent here? Did Glenn get an interview with Julie? I don't think so. And did Jody get an interview with I'm pretty sure that Glenn, one of his gripes was that
was
he
it?
Did not even get to meet Julie.
They didn't even give me a water bottle.
Yeah.
Okay, well, nevertheless, I still, if you're asking me to guess, they've had buybacks every season, so I have to think that they're probably going to have one this season as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Den of Temptation creates a possible, you know, revolving door system that we could see if we, even if we don't do like a battle back competition thing where they throw a random Friday episode up. This Den of Temptation twist, just in and of itself, with the nature of repercussions coming for accepted choices, like, there's a way to, you know, I mean, Paul is kind of responsible for Cam going. Wouldn't it be kind of somehow fitting if Paul gets the next temptation and the ramifications of that are that Cameron is back and he's got some unfinished business or something? I could see it.
I will say the thing that makes me lean towards it is I think that on the schedule, there are some Friday night episodes planned along the way. And so unless Ziggy Marley is going to be back with the band this
yes!
summer, I feel like that there's certainly a possibility that we could end up seeing a battle back. I don't know why an interview with Julie Chen. I see people are saying in the chat room that there was an interview with Julie Chen and Cameron. I don't know why a interview with Julie Chen would be disqualifying for a battle back situation.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would have just expected some kind of information, you know, like maybe something
right.
about like Cameron is gone, but he's not necessarily out. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think they did that the first.
They delayed it. Yeah, that sounds right. I just, you know, again, it just speaks to kind of this, you know, the game is getting kind of messy, kind of busy a little bit. And it's like we're asking people to vote on things that they don't know what they're voting on. They don't know what the rules are. Like, I think this is where we're really getting into a very
guys, it's
messy.
The first night. It's the first night. We're never going to make it through the summer if we're already nitpicking on stuff. This is the first night. This is the first night of the season.
I was also going to say that at least if they're going to do something like the Den of Temptation, I'm glad it's early in the season because you know it's going to go away. I mean, the fact that she said that, you know, there was no asterisk rule about, you know, unless everybody's gotten a temptation, then we can go back and start going through again. She said if you were voted into the Den of Temptation, then you obviously are not eligible again. Eventually they're going to run out of house guests if they keep doing it. So I think it'll go away probably at the jury phase.
But I think that's kind of the idea too, right? It's purposely vague. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do with Den of Temptation. I mean, it's the takeover, right? Like we could cut
right,
this at
takeover,
any point
exactly.
if it's not working. Like we left ourselves a lot of wiggle room here.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Brett, is there anybody that's still alive from the Temptations? Could they come and perform the backyard concert this year?
I don't know. I would have to Google that and see if it could. It's so funny because I was like, maybe Siri could tell me, but Siri might also start playing like Whitney Duncan, like what happened in your rap
yeah.
episodes.
Yeah, that could happen too.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, we'll be on the lookout for that. All right, let's talk about a couple more people that we haven't touched on, and then we'll get to your questions. Hashtag RHAP. So Jessica, we really barely touched on. I know that there was a lot of Jessica hype going into this. You guys were pretty high on her. Alex, anything that made you go one way or the other on Jessica?
I'm more bullish on Jessica because I I had hoped that she was planning on going in there and being flirty and using her looks to her advantage, because that's a weapon that she clearly has. But now we know for sure that's something she's going to have no problem doing. She's been watching for a long time. I think the element of, like, having grown up watching this with her dad and, like, you know, feeling like she's doing this for her dad, it's going to keep her driven and keep her focused and keep her head in the game in a way that I think is beneficial. Like, we already heard, who was it? Cody. Yeah, Cody. He goes in, I got my eyes on the prize. And then he sees Jessica and already he's like, oh, well, I could be in trouble. So Jessica's not going to have that problem, I don't think. She's got, you know, her head's going to be in the right place for most of this game.
Right. And I'm here. I have to tell you guys, I am here for Jessica. I'm not normally here for these types, but she is so stunning and so hungry. And she's obviously a fan of the show. It was the Fatal Five last year, Rob, not the Femme Fatale.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. It was a comic book reference. I couldn't even think of it.
Didn't
first.
Last
I
long. Had,
sorry.
Yeah, it didn't last long. Exactly. But I love the idea of it though. I don't know if she could do something like that, but if not, maybe she can hook up with a showman's like Cody or Matt and run the show. I obviously, Matt, all the females were not immune to Matt's charms of the silver hair. I thought that was very cute as well. And he seems to know it.
Okay. Let's talk about Elena. We touched on her cheese sandwich. It was effective with Paul. I liked her going in. Brent, what'd you think of Elena?
I liked her. I thought she was very fun and very down to earth, and she wasn't threatening at all, but she seemed like she at least knew enough about the game to know what to do. I don't know that she necessarily knew how to approach Paul the right way, or if she just fell face first into it, but whatever she did, he seemed to have a good rapport with her, and I think that she could also go far in this game. She's somebody who she's not going to be threatening like a Christmas from her physical standpoint, but she also, I don't think, knows enough about the game to be threatening from a mental standpoint. Unless the nerds tend to go after somebody like her, I think she'll be okay.
You know, we have not seen Paul showmance correctly, so do we know his type? I mean, I feel like that's somebody who's a little more offbeat.
That blue avatar snake, that's his type.
It's short of an avatar woman being in the
say,
house.
And maybe this was the nature of the house and the fact that he was really put through it last season. But coming into the house this season, Paul's looking sharp. He's really put together, nice and clean cut, just like me with my new hair. You know, he looked good. You know, so he could find himself a lady friend.
Yeah, Elena's interesting. I think I really like that play. Like, yeah, you know, they always say the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, and she proved that point tonight. I loved seeing that. That was good. But and she did it in a way that wasn't like sycophantic too. Like, I forget what season it was where someone's like, "I brought you a sandwich in the HOH room," and it was just like, "Oh, this is pathetic." It didn't come off that way. It was well done. It wasn't too sycophantic. I think. You know, to me, I think the thing that is going to get her in trouble, she's at least self-aware enough to realize it, but like as a radio personality who just like hates for a living, she's probably going to say some things and be like, "Oops, shouldn't have said." Like, I'm reminded of when LaVita in Big Brother Canada 4 wins head of household and Cass is like, "Oh, this bitch." And then like realizes, "Oh, I shouldn't have said that," and goes on the block for it. You know, it's like sometimes you just can't stop your mouth in time. And I feel like that's maybe going to be what gets Elena. I also could see her not getting along with some of the girls for some reason.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, and I also agree with what you said. That was even acknowledged in her interview where they were talking with her, and I think it was her mom, where her mom was like, you know, just say less, don't say as much, and she's like, "Well, I'm gonna say what needs to be said." I'm like, "That's not the answer I want to hear from you." Yeah.
Dominique had, I thought, a good night. I think that there was some concern after she said in one of her bios that she was going to tell the truth and she wasn't going to care what people thought. But I thought that she did a really good job of keeping her cards close to the vest all night and was saying all the right things.
Yeah, saying all the right things, doing all the right things. I felt good about her and the fact that she got a friendship bracelet, obviously connected enough with Paul to be safe. The other, wasn't like, Alex, correct me, but she was the girl who said that she didn't say what she was, right?
No, yeah, she bailed on the government engineer thing.
Right, and she's the one who's saying she's going to say the truth. So see, this is why we it's impossible to project in a draft or anything else like this when you're looking at the cast, when I'm doing a cast preview with Rob, because she's saying one thing in the bio and talking to Big Jeff, saying, "I'm going to tell the truth when I get in there." And then when she goes in, the first thing out of her mouth is a lie. So, I mean, tell me what I'm supposed to believe, people.
Well, at least she didn't say she was a kindergarten teacher. That's good. Yeah, that's, we've gotten that too much. That's too obvious.
It never works.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Mark, or a.k.a. Johnny Bravo. Alex almost fell off the couch when Paul called him Johnny Bravo.
Good pull.
Yeah. So are you pro-Mark? So far, so good with Mark?
Yeah. I think, you know, I like Mark as a character because he's just such a Hulk. I mean, this guy's so big. Like, the few macro group shots we got, like, he even makes Matthew look like a, you know, somebody's little kid that's just, like, holding his dad's hand at the park.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a giant, giant dude. And he seems like he actually is, like, a really, you know, sensitive soul. So I think that's a very interesting character to me. I've always, you know, I love James Clement on Survivor. I was fascinated when you get a guy like Howard who's cut from stone. Like, let's see how... You know, he's going to come in and just be it. So there's no way to get that target off your back. So how do you play it?
Yeah. Now, Brent, Mark described himself as the total package in his pre-interview tonight.
Yeah, definitely. Tickled in pink is his favorite color, and he has like hearts floating around him. I thought that he's going to do great. He said he's a big teddy bear. He's somebody who very much lined up with the way he was presented, because they said he was a teddy bear in the intro package, and when he was in the house, I feel like no one's intimidated by this guy. I mean, they might be intimidated by his muscles, but here's the thing: if the superfans are running the game, then they're not going to know a lot of these competitions. It's not brute strength, for heaven's sake. I mean, you really don't need to fear somebody like this. Especially in the early going.
Yeah. Brent, I wanted to know if you saw Mark in the backyard photos.
I did, but I was... See this? I was going to say something. I thought, you know what? I'm on the primetime rap cast. I'm not going to say anything with Rob and Alex and look like a total pervert. But now you're asking, so I will. Yes, I did notice the pink monster. If you noticed, okay. In the group shots. That's why I'm in a little Facebook group with all my gay friends, and we're all talking about the pink monster.
Okay. All right. That's a thing. Rob, that's a thing.
Yes. The Mark has a great swimsuit. It's very, very short. And it shows off everything. Okay. So why wouldn't you be a fan?
All right. There you go. All right. Another reason to check out the live feeds, I guess. Raven, yeah. I thought was very impressed with tonight. I thought she was great.
Yeah, she was kind of fun. I didn't know what to expect from Raven. She seemed like someone that could be forgettable. But I don't think she's going to be forgettable. If anything, she's going to be interesting for maybe some of the same reasons that Judd was. Like some of these like Southern isms. Like, he's finer than a toad hair split three ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, huh, you know, you scratch your head and you're like, that's a really dumb thing I just heard. And then you think about it, like, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I liked her. I thought that she was a fun personality, Brent.
Yeah, I thought she was too. She was, ironically, this is how things work. I'm not talking about the draft, but just speaking of it, when we're projecting house guests, she's somebody who fell all the way down. And then at the end of it, I was like, that's probably a little bit too low for her. Like, the fact that she fell down to 16 or 15, I mean, come on. She's somebody who definitely has a good chance to win the game. And she was personable enough and quirky enough. I thought it was interesting. I think it was Matt who said to her, that, you know, I love your movements, the way you move. And she's a dancer, and you can, even the way she moves around the room, I feel like you can kind of see that. And she gave us our first great GIF of the season, and it is pronounced GIF when she was conga lining in the diary room.
Yeah,
saying, you know,
that was funny.
You're evicted, you're out, you're evicted. I thought that was great.
Yeah, good job by her. And I thought it was also interesting, no mention of any of her medical issues that we learned about in the preseason. We were concerned, are there going to be some sort of like special dispensation for her? Could she not be? Have not that she, at least on the show, did not bring it up, and we didn't get anything in the diary room. It wasn't even in her package, I don't believe, in terms of when she was getting the key. So maybe this isn't going to be as big of a deal as we thought it might be in the preseason.
Well, she is a ghost hunter, so maybe she managed to exorcise that demon before she went in.
I was gonna say, I don't know about the we. I was the one person on the panel saying, no, there's no way it's gonna be an issue. They're not gonna make a special thing for her. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it would just cause resentment in the house. I have to believe that issue was at least stable enough for her to eat slop and be a have-not and take cold showers just like everybody else.
Okay. And then real quick, before we get to tonight's questions, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at Denny's. Now, Denny's has always been a place where America can come get their favorite breakfast, lunch, and dinner dishes, serving guests whatever they want, whenever they crave it. You're never a have-not. Now, with Denny's On Demand, they've taken the same always-open philosophy that is synonymous with our restaurants and applied it to online ordering, bringing access to our craveable diner fare wherever our guests want it. Alex, how much of a temptation? You're going to be in the Denny's of temptation at all times that you could be able to order Denny's on demand.
Yeah, and stream while I'm doing it.
Yeah, watch those live feeds. Thanks to the all-new platform, guests have a quick and easy way to place a mobile or online order for takeout or delivery of their favorite menu items all day, every day, with Denny's On Demand new online ordering. Your diner favorites are available at your fingertips with Denny's.com. Visit Denny's.com and click to order online or download the Denny's app. Let's get into some of our questions. Again, hashtag RHAP. This is normally around the time we'd also get into the spoilers, but no live feeds just yet. So here is first up, Mr. Robot Taren. There's no way Paul gets far. Should he have declined the invitation to play? I don't think that this is the kind of thing that you can walk away from. And Big Brother calls. They want you to be the one returning player. You basically come back and be the star of our show. I mean, I'm sure Paul has a lot going on, but what does he have that's going on that's better than this?
I mean, right. Last summer, he already had his business up and going before he played the first time, and he was able to get friends to take it over. So why can't he do it again? Where else are you? The lotto's never going to offer you a 1 in 17 shot at this kind of money. Yeah. I mean, these are great odds. Like, no matter who you are, you should take it. And then on top of that, Paul last season watched the returnee factor. I mean, he feels probably that Nicole, a big part of why she won was that she's coming back and she knows things. So I feel like he's thinking, like, this is a good shot for me.
Brent, let me ask you this. Do you feel like that Paul coming back here in Big Brother 19, does that throw cold water on a potential all-star for Big Brother 20?
I don't know. But I agree with Melissa, who's previously said that we don't know if they're ever going to do an all-stars. I mean, they just don't. Every time we ask for it, they seem to not want to give us that. So I don't know. I think that, I mean, and there's also, if he doesn't last very long in this game, I think there's every chance they could bring him back one more time in Big Brother 20. So I don't think that it necessarily excuses him from any all-stars season, unless he does something amazing like wins or gets to the final two again. I agree with you guys, though. There's no way he can turn this down. And we're assuming that they told him that he was going to be the only person to star the show. He might have thought, well, hey, if I'm coming back like last season when they brought back four other people, I could have a real shot to win this game. So there's no way you can turn this down. And he's probably making a better stipend than other people as well. So you have to take, if they call, you have to listen.
Okay. This is from Nathan, who wanted to ask, could we see someone decline a temptation this summer? What kind of temptation could you see someone turning down? Well, let's try to see if we can figure out. So there would be 3 weeks of safety offered. What is it called? The pendulum of power? What is it?
The pendant of protection.
I mean, I think that this is probably a good rule for the people behind the scenes at Survivor and Big Brother. If there is a, you know, power of veto, okay, that's stuck. But I think that anything that with the word of in the middle, I think probably let's just get away from that. That's probably don't do it.
Yeah.
Like the Mad Lib of like the noun of what would you say? That's a verb?
Adjective? Or
noun of verb?
Yeah, adjective.
Yeah. Medallion of power, pendant of protection. Just get away from
Pants
that.
Pants of plenty, sure.
Right. Yeah. That being said, what do we think is going to be the downside of this when it's offered to Paul, Alex?
It could be kind of any variety of things. I feel like it's not necessarily going to be something tailored to Paul because anyone could win it, right? So it's not going to be like something that's, you know, like made with Paul specifically in mind, but
right. But is it going to be everybody's a have nots, cold showers?
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah. I think he's probably, you know, the Sunday show, they're probably going to want to release the have not twist the room onto the house. I'm sure it opens on Sunday night. I have to bet one of the most likely outcomes is for the consequence of Paul picking the pendant of protection would probably be that the have-nots are released onto the house. He has to pick four of them, maybe. And, you know, so he gets to pick four people or five people or whatever to be have-nots, but yet he's safe for 3 weeks. I mean, that would probably be a good comeuppance for him to get that much protection.
I think what it's going to be is that Paul gets offered the pendant of protection, and if he accepts it, they let the ants back in the house early. I think the they just bring the ants right in the first week.
They have full control.
Deal with
that
the whole summer. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, I think that's assuming they could control the ants. Yeah.
Okay. Kelly Slay Ann wants to say, how would you have approached Paul for the friendship bracelet? What's the right approach, Brent?
I feel like you either need to be personable or logical. I feel like Cameron failed because he wasn't logical with Paul. If he wasn't going to be personable enough with him, he should have just said, look, I'm keeping you, and here's why. You know, and give him concrete reasons why it's beneficial for Cameron to keep Paul in the house. Other than that, you're going to have to approach him on a personal level and basically guilt him into keeping you. I feel like that's what Raven did and Elena did to a certain extent, where they were like, please, please, like, I really want to stay. Like, I feel like that he probably responds well. Look, he had 8 bracelets to give. I feel like there was a lot of different ways to go with this.
Yeah, I feel like the key was just not exuding a desperate energy. I feel like that's something I kind of picked up on for the people that maybe he didn't give a bracelet to. I mean, Megan is saying, I'm a big fan of yours, but she's almost like trying to forcefully convince, I swear I'm your fan. Like, it's a little much. I just think what you need to do is kind of what Matt did, except for that one sentence. It's what Mark did, just going, what's up, bro? I mean, really casual. Just keep it very, very, like, don't talk game almost, if you can help.
Don't
just
talk
say,
game.
Like, look, I got your back, man. Like, I want to work with you. You're funny as hell.
Right.
You seem cool. I'm a real chill person. I think this could work, man. So just, yeah.
I agree with the second part of what you said, not the first part. Because Cameron was like, he was like that. I want to work with you. And Paul didn't buy it.
No, but you shouldn't bring up the game with Paul. With Paul, it's all about, Paul, you're so funny. I want to have fun with you this summer. I want to hang out with Pablo. I want to build a fort with you this summer. I want to play, like, I don't mean in the game sense. I think as soon as you start talking about game with Paul, I think he's going to detach and think that you're being shady. But it's just like Elena, like, was like, hey, I made you this sandwich. Let's hang. Like, are we friends? Bro. Is this friendship? I think that was the right way to appeal to, because Paul does. I don't think he cares about being seen as a great player. I think that he's somebody who detaches himself from that. Even when he lost, like, he's like whatever, never cared. It didn't bother me. Whatever. I'm just here for friendship. And sort of like, he just wants to be that big personality that's almost like above the game, that he's entertainment, not more that he cares more about being like he. I really believe Paul, would you rather lose the game and be entertaining or win the game and be boring? He would rather lose the game and be entertaining.
Yeah, no, I think that's accurate. I mean, I think there's a lot of examples you can point to. And yeah, I mean, on Twitter, you know, right after the season, when you would think maybe he's regretting the decision or stuff. I mean, he was always, you know, quote tweeting people just like, it's funny you care more about this than I do, fam. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it seems very clear that Paul didn't lose any sleep over losing the game too much. At least that's the image he wants to present. And I think if anything, you know, it would be great to have feeds because we could see Cameron's body language. And I just want to know, again, we go back to this, you know, super fan, could I go in week 1 thing? Like, maybe he was saying it without saying it. Like, maybe he's just exuding this energy, you know?
But I really believe with Paul that, and I think we talked about this last summer, that I think he comes from a family that is, you know, I think that they're not, I don't know what anybody's situation is, but I think that he's not desperate. He's 24 years old. He doesn't have kids to support. The fame means more to him than ultimately that cash prize does. That I think that he feels like, hey, if I get as famous as I can get, if I get as big as I can get, that I will be able to out-earn that money that ultimately will come from potentially being a boring vanilla player and doing what's best to win the game. Do you agree with that, Brent?
I don't know. I mean, $500,000 is a lot of money. On the other hand, it is a bit of a crapshoot. The fact that you're like, what, a 1/16 shot at it. I don't know. I do feel like there's an element of Paul that really wanted to win. Here's the thing. I watched him all last season. He wanted to win. It was only when he didn't win that he said he didn't care. So I feel like that's a bit of a put on, and I feel like he does want to win, but he wants to maintain the cool act, like, you know, I don't really care. I'm just here for friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and if nothing else, right, definitely good for the Dead Skull brand, for sure. I mean, I have to think he saw a huge uptick in t-shirt sales after last season.
Okay, let's go with Jen, who wants to ask, how is having to throw the first HOH a consequence for the money? Most people do this anyways, and it's anonymous. Now, we haven't seen the first HOH play out. Do we think that there is going to start to be speculation of, like, okay, who didn't do well in the HOH competition? That's the person that took the money, or did Paul coming back into the house? Did Cameron going home? Or is everybody already just moving on to the next thing, Alex?
If they're smart and they're still paying attention, they should be watching very closely during that competition. I mean, that's the correct play. Whether or not people have their heads in the game to that degree remains to be seen. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely where they should be. I mean, it's a very interesting wrinkle, isn't it? Like, what happens if Kevin says, like, nah, screw that, I'm going to win it, and then just wins it?
Then they take the check, and they go, tss, 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 tss.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time that a twist has ever been introduced where it's on the house guest exclusively. Like, this thing is going to happen via production, but you have to actualize it. It's very strange.
I like it.
I agree, it's very strange. I didn't like the fact that they were giving away the biggest cash prize on the premiere of Big Brother in history, and yet no one was accountable for it. I mean, I guess this is it's what I said before. They wanted Paul to come into the house. It wasn't really a choice. They just wanted to give the money away so they could say, oh, somebody picked the $25,000, and now that's of a consequence of that temptation. Paul is back in the house. But it would have been nice if they said, we're going to offer you guys $25,000, and the halter of this may be revealed at a later time. I wonder then how many people would have pressed the button. I still think that you would have had a handful of people press it. It's $25,000.
Okay, let's do a few more questions here tonight, and let's take this one from Krim. Have any of your views changed on any of the house guests after watching the first episode? We ultimately talked just about everybody. Any other thoughts on the house guests from the first 2 hours that was different from our perception going in?
For me, not too much. I think maybe... you know, a lot of confirmation, I think, which is like, you know, you make these predictions about, you know, Jason's just going to be, you know, that loud dude who keeps saying Sam Hill in the diary room all the time. And sure enough, you know what I mean? Sometimes you're validated. But you know,
Jason might be the one person that we didn't actually discuss.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to think of who we haven't talked about.
Yeah. I am not impressed.
Whistle nuts. No, yeah, not me either.
But I wasn't impressed going into this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think Alex is probably the best example. I mean, we talked about Alex, but yeah, I think a lot of people were writing her off. She comes in and she's playing up the gamer thing, which is encouraging. However, it was pointed out to me on Twitter that if you rewatch her, her getting the key package, the Xbox controller she's using is not plugged in. So not a good look for professional gamer Alex here.
I thought that those were really funny because some people did a better job than other people at pretending that they're surprised. Right. Some people, like Cameron, was like, what? Oh man, a key. but I agree about Alex. It's so funny because watching her preseason, I couldn't stand her. I was like, oh, please be the first boot. I don't want you in the house. I don't want to have to cover you. Now, after watching her on the show for a night, I think she's going to be fascinating. I really do.
Okay.
Kevin got his key in an empty pizza box, but they're already eating the pizza. It's like, dude, you would have seen it. A little bit of...
Devin in the chat room is saying that the Xbox controller is wireless.
Wireless, yes, but it wasn't turned on, sir. Okay. I have wireless controllers. Okay. I'm well aware of this.
Snap, snap, right. At you.
Yeah. Snap, snap.
Okay. All right. Kelly White, how did you guys feel about showing the votes after the eviction? I thought it provided some actual factual suspense for once. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a unanimous decision, and that's why we didn't see any of the votes. But it was interesting that the reveal was sort of Survivor style. Brent, did you like how they handled that?
Yeah, I thought so. Obviously, they wanted to move things along. It would have probably been a little problematic to have 15 freaking people come in the house and come in the dining room and vote. It was suspenseful. I agree with you, Rob. I thought it was the fact that they were yada yada through the whole thing. I thought meant it was, you know, 15-0-0 or whatever it was, 13-0-0. The fact that it was such a split vote was interesting to me. But the majority knew where the majority had the votes. There was no way, no matter how the other people voted, it was obvious to me that those five guys, it was Jason, Josh, Matt, Cody, and Mark had not talked with anybody else because they voted wrong. Everybody else voted together.
Yeah, another little just thing I noticed, you know, Julie saying, like, I bet you're wondering, like, to eight people, I bet you're wondering, like, where the other house guests are. It's like, well, not if they've watched, like, the last 3 years when you've done this separate move-in. I mean, really? They were selling it like a twist. They went to a commercial break on it, on Dominique being like, I wonder what's going on. There's only eight of us. none of us do. We all know exactly what's happening.
I mean, it's the first. I mean, what do you want Julie Chen to say?
All right,
it's like,
all right.
You know.
Load
in night.
I'm mining for gold where I can find it.
Patrick said, would you rather see them tell the house guests the consequences ahead of time? Would it have changed the outcome if they knew? I'm not sure for which thing. Is this for the Paul vote? Like, hey, if you take that $25,000, Paul's going to come in. Kevin would have been like, who's Paul?
Yeah.
It wouldn't change anything for him.
What's that mean
for me? I couldn't believe when I heard that this was going to happen tonight, when Julie said, you know, $25,000 and somebody's going to come back in and somebody's going to get evicted. I was hoping that Cameron had like taken the $25,000 and then was evicted because of it or something like that. I would have been okay with that. The fact that he didn't even press his button, I feel like, you know, Ian said on Twitter, you have to press the button. Obviously, whatever twist is released into the house is going to affect everybody equally. So I thought that was a really good point.
Yeah, you always want to be Dr. Will, who like pressed the button and then lied about it later. You don't want to be Hardy, who didn't press the button who did press the button and later was like, stupid people who pressed the button just because he's bitter he didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Frank DiNardo says, do you think that Christmas knew beforehand she had the votes to stay, hence why she chose a vote over a competition? Brent, you said that this was results oriented, that I like that, but I got the feeling that she did know she was going to be safe.
I agree with you on that part as well, but I'm alluding to the fact that, you know, maybe if people were lying to her and she got evicted, that maybe we wouldn't look so favorably on it.
But that would be results oriented to say it was bad at that point.
Taryn said it best on Twitter, which was there was obviously some downtime in between the competition and when they ultimately had to decide, and she had a good sense that she was going to stay, because why wouldn't somebody like that pick a competition against those two chumps? You're telling me that she doesn't want a competition? She had to know that she was going to stay.
Okay. What's the time frame on this day where they said, okay, Cameron was in the house for 12 hours. What do they come in, like 10 a.m. and it's like 10 o'clock at night by the time they ultimately do this vote?
No, I mean, they have a live studio audience for the move-in, right? So you would think it's probably not too early.
Do they have a live studio audience?
I mean, there was an audience there. I'm not sure
who
if
knows,
they were real
right.
people or if they were okay. extras.
They might have brought in the people off the street.
Yeah, or what. Right. But, I mean, I just don't know like what to, it feels like that it would be really super early in the morning to start. It did seem like it was hot at the time when they Kevin first took the temptation. So I don't know. But then we didn't go back to the backyard. I couldn't tell if it was nighttime or what from the lighting. So
yeah, and right. I doubt Cameron went out at 5 a.m. or anything. So.
Like, do they eat lunch? I'm interested. Okay, Logan wants to know, if nobody accepted the 25K, do they have to have Paul as the temptation for the next one? Yeah, they're gonna keep throwing Paul out there until. I mean, I think that would have happened. Nobody would have taken the temptation. I think Julie Chen would have said, okay, the offer is now $30,000. Yeah. Now does anybody want to take it? Like, they were going to, keep going until Paul got in that house.
Your boy was getting in there. Yeah.
Your boy was coming in. He was going to, the price was going up.
Julie, total friendship.
Total friendship. Cost of doing business. Okay. Corey King, what's your opinion on Paul's strategy to mix the safety bracelets between athletic, smart, misfits? I thought that Paul actually did a pretty good job there of splitting things up. Alex, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's fine. You probably don't want to just like give them all to the guys and create an undertone to the season that didn't exist already.
Mm-hmm.
So by not, picking with, it seems like people are hanging in clusters already to a degree. I mean, it always happens within hours. People kind of form little clusters. So, by diversifying, he keeps himself out of any one cluster, which is important. He doesn't. He needs to be seen as a free agent because there's just simply too many people who could target him.
Good job by Paul.
Your boy doesn't want to bite himself in the butt.
Yes, never. He doesn't want to do that.
Seems hard.
Okay, reality check. Is Alex Kidwell not wearing his glasses so he's not evicted first from the podcast tonight? Did you take a lesson from Cameron?
Yeah. The glasses are going on the shelf for a while. I think that's not a good thing these days.
Okay.
It's time has passed.
That's a good idea.
I was very critical of Cameron for wearing his glasses into the house. Look, I know the production probably made him wear them out there on the stage, but the minute he walks in the door, he could take them off
and step on them and be like, oh my God, what happened?
without his glasses, he looks just like any other jock. So, I mean, I don't understand why he would keep them on, especially in that flannel shirt that he was wearing, the plaid flannel shirt, just like Steve had.
It's a good shirt. It's a good shirt.
I know.
I mean, if he literally can't see without them, and I don't even, who knows if he has contacts or if he has like, what is it?
He
like
should have contacts.
I mean, some people can't wear contacts or they don't like contacts.
I could interview without the glasses, I think.
Yeah. He did. So. He said
but maybe he could sit there and talk to you without his glasses, but maybe his vision isn't good enough where he can't walk around the house without his glasses.
So all you got to do is sit there and talk to people. That's how the game is. Just post up, man. Find your spot.
News. Okay.
And then make some social inroads.
I just don't think we should, it's really our spot to judge whether or not he can see without his glasses or not.
Well, then why are we here?
Okay. Den Dollar wants to know, who needs to win this HOH? Should Paul throw it? Okay, what player needs this HOH the most, Brent?
I think the people who were in the minority tonight. I mean, one of those five jockey guys. It's so amazing how it broke down. Literally,
the guys.
Josh, Jason, Matt, Mark, and Cody. Like, the five biggest guys in the house all were in the minority. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that if anybody in the majority alliance or in the majority vote alliance, we're assuming that's sort of some sort of a, you know, amalgamation of some alliance, if they get power, I feel like they're probably going to put two bros on the block, and that would not be fun.
Okay.
I would say, like, conventional wisdom says Paul should throw it because he really, the best thing for his long-term, you know, prospects is to get under the radar somehow in this game. But I think what I really wanted to see him do with these friendship bracelets that he didn't do, or at least we didn't see him do, is secure deals for the future. What he did was, like, negotiate, and he got some vagaries from people, like, I'll get your back. But no, man, I want to know, next week, you in HOH, who are you putting up? Or, like, you don't have to go to that level, but...
Yeah, I think that's too hard to play that big of a game from that point.
It could be, but I think you're Paul, you're already in there, and your back's against the wall. I think you'd need to elicit at least from a few people something that you can take to the bank going forward.
I don't think his back is against the wall to start. I think that, he's, like, revered as this guy who's on a pedestal right now. I think that he's in a position where he needs to sort of, like, foster a lot of goodwill. I don't think he needs to start, like, making deals right off the bat.
Yeah, well, I guess, it does depend on who wins this competition if it's not him. Because, you know, if a Josh wins, he's probably in much better shape than, say, Megan, who seems like she wants to target him, or Cody.
Okay. All right. I think Cody is the one that needs to win this HOH.
Yeah. Why? Because Alex has already told him to eat poop and people.
Yeah, I think this guy could use a buddy. I think use it like.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. And then BB Janie wants to say, Den of Temptation reminds me of a weekly Pandora's Box. Can we expect a Mr. Spectacular appearance? Oh, that would be fun, right, Brent?
I think most assuredly a Mr. Spectacular appearance. I don't know who else could come in, but I think here's the thing. Like I said, I know that none of us are loving the Den of Temptation, but at least it's happening earlier in the game, where I feel like if you're a good player...
Oh, I'm fine for the Den of Temptation. I'm not anti-Den of Temptation.
Could be worse.
Well, when it was announced, everybody was boohooing it. And,
why? Because I said no noun of verb? That's why. I'm fine with Den of Temptation.
Okay.
All right. Is there anybody? Do we have a new Mr. Spectacular? Can we have a new person come in?
Victor, I guess.
Victor? What would Victor do?
He would, like, wear his belt, and then he would, like... Well, you know, I mean, I like the way they've used Jesse and they use Rachel in the Pandora's Box. It's really funny and ironic, right? Like, Jesse, it's like someone who's going to help you in this game. And then he was, like, giving you, like, nutritional supplements. Like, that was great.
Yeah.
And, like, Rachel, like, someone who loves you. And they showed Ian's family. And then Rachel's like, Ian, I love you.
Okay.
So those are good.
All right, let's see one last question. And this is from Jordan, who asks, what do you think will happen if Kevin tries to throw the HOH and somehow wins? What would BB do? I think they would take the money away. Here, let's do one more question.
Or just blow up a spot.
Yeah, well, or just say that, blow up a spot and say, hey, you know, you took the $25,000. You can't be HOA.
Kevin is not eligible to win this competition. Okay. Second place now wins.
Yeah. Okay. And then Cam Perry, our buddy, says, do you think that Alex now has a realistic shot to win the game after an impressive night one of the premiere? I mean, I think that she probably, her win equity went from probably that we thought maybe 0 or 1% to, you know, a reasonable, like 5 or 6%.
Yes, I would wholeheartedly co-sign that, and probably not anything.
She went from no chance to, you know, in the mix.
Yeah, let's not go crazy here.
Yeah.
I'm not going crazy.
Rome wasn't built
at least
day.
I mean, the person.
I was my.
There should be no person that we say has more of a 10% chance to win this game that of the entire field.
100%. Yeah, you never know how can. Please. I don't know. I mean. I don't know. There's no way they're going to give the money to Paul. I don't really think that.
Paul definitely that you might say that of the, like, if we're going to look at the 16 and do power rankings, who is most likely to win? Paul would probably be number one. But you would say that, okay, well, Paul has like an 11% chance to win the game, and then
solid,
you know,
alliance with production,
right? Not necessarily an alliance with production, but you know that the return that there is like the fans vote on stuff. You know, he has a great shot to do well, but it's not like that this is a situation where you feel like that he's going to come in and dominate under any circumstances. There's a million things that can go wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I agree.
And all this isn't a house like built for him. It's not all Paul fans. We already have seen the warning signs.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's going to be it for tonight. Anything else, Brent, that you wanted to get off your chest about this 2-hour premiere?
No, great show tonight. Kept me entertained. I wasn't bored. I was glad it came down to a vote at the end. I was actually glad that Cameron got outvoted. I mean, I felt like I knew what was going to happen, but I felt like I could feel better about it from a super fan point of view if he at least got a vote out of it, you know. And because you can't bitch about it then, you know. You got to play Big Brother. You got to convince your housemates. They didn't want to vote for you, and that's why you're super sent packing.
Okay. All right. Well, we wish Cameron the best. We have no idea, you know, where he is, if he's going into battle back, if he's coming out, if he's watching this sometime in the next 24 hours, who knows. But I really was hoping for better for him, but unfortunately, yeah. I think that a little bit out of his control in terms of just that. We've said it with Steve. We said, oh no, well, Steve is going to have to pay that invoice that was due by Ian winning, by Cochran winning, and he managed to win. Eventually, one of these people that fit that nerd archetype was going to be a first boot on one of these seasons.
Time to pay the toll.
Yeah, pay the bill. Pay the bill, Cameron. So, unfortunately, that was his lot, in addition to making some mistakes of his own. But, okay, sad night for Cameron. All right, so that being said, tomorrow night I will be back at 10:15 p.m. Eastern Time with Melissa and Taryn to talk about everything from the second night of Big Brother, which will then lead into the Big Brother live feeds getting kicked off. If you want to get your hands on those and try CBS All Access for free for 1 week, go to robhasawebsite.com/livefeeds for that. And then be on the lookout for our live show that we will have on our Facebook page, a Facebook Live, coming up on Friday morning. That's going to also be in our podcast feed. So be sure you're subscribed to the podcast, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And if you want to get even more involved with Rob as a Podcast, and really, why wouldn't you? Be sure to check out our Patreon page that we just added a bunch of new incentives to our patrons, including a new behind the scenes web series where I am filming more and more of what goes on in terms of bringing you the podcast. We're calling those Rehapisodes. There's a trailer up on our YouTube channel, and we've made the first long form 20-minute episode of that available to all of our patrons at our Patreon page, which is at patreon.com/RHAP, if you want to check that out. Okay, so we need a hashtag for tonight.
Yeah, let's see.
I was saying, like, the chat room is really terrible. Everything they suggested was like,
Brad, you know, rule number one.
Yeah, don't attack the chat room.
Don't go after the chat room.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I mean, I was watching. I never watch, and I was looking at the.
I thought the chat room was fantastic tonight. I thought they were fantastic. I thought that Twitter was amazing. And you know who else was great? Reddit.
Yeah. Tumblr, you killed it.
Very good.
Joker's updates, you're always fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come for my wig.
Traitors, yes. All of you.
All right. All right, so what is that? What is it?
We had Illusion of Choice. We had Pink Monster. We had
there's a lot of Pink Monster on Twitter. We don't need to do that.
A lot of love for the Pink Monster.
Let's do a hashtag illusion of choice because I think that that was again
summation of the evening.
Noun of verb. I think that
or hat of household.
Hat of household. No, that's that. What about just noun of verb? I think that's let's go with
noun
that.
Of verb.
Okay, noun of verb is the way to go. All right, so very fun to be back live with you guys. Got a lot of Big Brother coming up this summer. You know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 35-40 recaps coming your way.
Maybe
so
more if they're doing these Friday shows.
Buckle up, Buttercup. Yeah, we're ready to go. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. It will be a busy summer for him as well. And then join us again in 24 hours to talk about night 2 of Big Brother 19. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.